All right.
Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the BAMF podcast. This is your host, Mike Laffrey, and today we've got three folks joining us. First, Mr. Dan Hauser. How you doing, Dan?
Great. Hello.
Great to have you back on the podcast.
Thanks. I love being on the podcast.
Next, we have the always charming and affable Chris McLaughlin.
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah, great to have you, Chris. Thanks for showing up.
Great to be here.
And last but certainly not least, Mr. Steve Kenson, RBG legend.
Thanks very much, Mike. I appreciate that. It's great to be here.
All right, cool. So today we wanted to talk about the always contentious subject of diversity in comics. And then we're going to work into some good-spirited pimping for various products. But
right.
Well, hey, Steve, since you suggested this subject, I have a feeling you probably have a lot to say about it. So can we start off with you?
Sure. Sure. I mean, you know, in my opinion, the issue of diversity in comics is really only contentious when it's either done badly or not done at all. You know, I think that the good examples of diversity, you know, being handled well are such that they're, you know, unfortunately not as notable. In some regards, I think that, you know, we tend to take more notice of the instances where it's done badly or not at all, and therefore, you know, there isn't as much attention paid to the occasions when it is done well.
Or when it's done in, like, a weird inverted way, like Starfire in the Red Hood and the Outlaws, like, where it's inclusive, because that's her culture, to wear a bikini or no clothes.
Right. Then just,
we're including women. See, she's nude.
Yeah, I would say that falls into the doing it badly category.
Exactly. Like they just or that's like that's not just badly. That's like welcome to Bizarro World.
Right.
It's
right.
Perfectly yeah, inclusive, I mean, and empowering.
If your notion of inclusive is that, you know, we have empowered women because we have given them bigger swords, you know, to go with their, you know, larger breasts, then, you know, you may be missing the target slightly.
Hey, on a tangent while we're talking about this, has anyone read Gail Simone's Red Sonja? Is that a good book? Because I don't generally read sword and sorcery comics.
Sadly, I have not gotten around to it yet, but I want to.
Okay. Because I hate to say it, but I'm embarrassed to buy a book with a woman in a chainmail bikini. I might have my wife go buy it for me, just because I feel like...
I have to stack it between, like, Little Lulu and, like, an old copy of Uncle Scrooge. I'm like, yeah. Oh, Red Sonja. Ah, it's just for, you know, for giggles.
It's for the kids, you know.
Yeah, it's like buying condoms at the pharmacy or something. You're like, I got 100 rolls of toilet paper, some condoms, and some glue.
Yeah. You know, a funny thing about Red Hood and the Outlaws, and we'll get back to the subject at hand. Chris, I don't know if you knew this, but back when I first had you on, when this was the Vigilance Press podcast, you were your usual honest and forthcoming self and had a lot of very honest opinions about Mr. Scott Lobdell and the quality or lack thereof of his writing.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it was funny. I didn't say anything. The podcast immediately previous to that, Scott Lobdell had been my guest. Guess who hasn't returned my phone calls in like 2 years?
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
Sorry about that.
I thought it was pretty amusing, and history has certainly borne you out.
Well, he probably hates my work, too, so yeah, it's probably mutual.
Like, getting more back on subject, so it's easy to find examples of diversity done wrong. Chris has a favorite joke about gay Hawkman.
Oh, that was actually con talk. We were having the usual slow Friday, and we were actually at the Gronin booth talking about the state of diversity. It actually predates Earth 2 Alan Scott being reborn as a gay man, but we were talking about how, you know, we were finally starting to see some real solid examples of gay characters being included in comics, and I think it wasn't too long after Silver Age came out, and we were sort of comparing and contrasting it to how, you know, you start to see like African American characters in the 70s. It was in the 70s. It was this really, 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 really poor start because they were basically taking existing white characters and just sticking black on the front of their names, like Black Goliath.
Black Goliath, yeah.
And if I remember, I think it was Steve that made that very cogent point, and I just said, "Oh my gosh, have we, after all this time, as the industry only progressed to the point where, you know, DC will be like, what's that you say, gay Hawkman? You know, they'll just stick gay in front of everybody's name.
Listen, bro, it's just Hawkman, okay? Come on.
Right.
You know, so yeah, so that was kind of our Friday con talk state of the industry at the time. But you know, mm-hmm. The Earth 2 Alan Scott is a sign that, you know, things have gotten better even from that relatively recent conversation. So there you go.
That's where I was trying to head. Is he a good example of diversity done well? And if so, why?
It depends on who's writing him. And isn't it sad that we're already having to have that conversation about a character? That was a vital key part of the way that James Robinson was writing him. And I really, really love where Robinson was going with the character. In fact, Robinson hasn't talked a whole lot about his exit from Earth 2, but he said one of the things he was planning on doing was he apparently most of the anti-gay bigoted hatred he got was from one particular guy in Brazil. So he was going to make it a point to say to have like Alan Scott's eventual next boyfriend be Brazilian. Just a sort of little shout out to that guy, which I would love to have seen for so many reasons. It was a great example of how to do diversity right. If you're going to have a character be diverse, have that be a vital, realistic, it's always a tricky word in comics, but part of who that character is. You know, since Tom Taylor's taken over, he's now just another guy who's a supporting character in a Superman and Batman book. I mean, he could be gay, straight, omnisexual, asexual. It just doesn't matter. It's just
because the Earth 2 book has become such a worlds at war scenario. You know, the personal lives of pretty much all the characters have largely become irrelevant. You know, I mean, they're all people, you know, who are fighting to the death to save their world from certain destruction. So, you know, their, you know, diversity issues kind of become very secondary at that point.
Isn't it strange how just judging by what I've seen in the panels, everybody on Earth has been killed twice? Or at least had their arm ripped off, and yet the number of superpowered characters seems to treble every issue. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wanted diversity. They're clearly a minority in that world, and they deserve to be represented. And I shun you for thinking that there shouldn't be more super people in the world. Sorry, Devil's Advocate's really hard with comics.
It's true. It's true. Alan Scott certainly does suffer from the poor romantic luck of all Green Lanterns. However, he basically has the gay version of the Kyle Rayner problem. You know, as soon as his boyfriend appeared in the book, I was like, wow, yeah, he's dead.
And
I was like, he's not going to make it more than another couple of issues. And lo and behold,
yeah, I wasn't scoffing out of mocking. I was scoffing out of sad.
Yeah,
like that. Well, that's just horrid.
Yeah. Well, Alan Scott was getting ready to propose, and I mean that's the the DC New 52 equivalent of saying I'm only 2 days away from retirement.
Right. Or did you sign those life insurance papers? No need. Everything's great. Yes,
everything's fine.
Yeah.
Yes, because God forbid that we should have a happy, stable couple of any kind,
or the Marvel version of Peter Parker having any sort of good fortune whatsoever.
Right.
I found a dollar. Well, Dr. Octopus just killed all your friends.
Right.
Hey, so Marvel has the Mighty Avengers is all African American I hate to say black, but all black characters now, right?
Yes, although I have to say I'm not reading Mighty Avengers these days.
I'm not either. I was hoping one of you guys was.
Okay. So, sadly, I can't say too much about it, but
racist. Okay.
Although in Marvel's column, they have the new Ms. Marvel book, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. Tell me about that, because that's one I haven't checked out yet.
The Ms. Marvel book very, very tangentially ties into Marvel's whole new Inhumans, or basically the New Mutants, because of what our lawyers say the studios require, but. It's largely irrelevant to the storyline, but it's basically it's very much a sort of classic Marvel young teenager, gets great power and, has to figure out, the great responsibility part, in terms of, what to do with it. Except that this time the young teenager is, a young Arab American woman in Jersey. You know, and she gets these shape-shifting powers and decides to model herself after Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, and, you know, it's all sorts of interesting hijinks, you know, ensue.
How does Carol Danvers feel about that?
So, well, interestingly enough, they haven't met yet, which I'm looking forward to, because I think that will be very entertaining.
Okay. Who's writing?
You know, I'm blanking on the writer's name at the moment, unfortunately.
I know Kelly Sue DeConnick was writing Captain Marvel for a while.
Yes, which is also an excellent book.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Chris, I'm sorry. You were saying?
That's okay. You know the great thing about that book? You know, any other time we would be happily talking about, hey, one of the big two is publishing a comic with a female lead. And now we can throw in that she's, you know, ethnically diverse, religiously diverse. So, you know, that's a real, real sign of progress at least one of the big two.
Yes, indeed.
It looks like her name is Kamala Khan.
Yes, that is the character's name.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I just found the found an article on Slate about her. All right, cool, cool. And so you've been reading it. It's a book worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely well worth checking out. It's paced, you know, like a modern comic, so it's a little slow to get started, but I have to say it's really starting to hit its stride, and it's really a fun book.
Okay.
I'll also point out that Superior Spider-Man actually was quite diverse in many different ways. I mean, there were people of every nationality. There was even I don't know if she was a chondroplastic dwarf or if she was considered just short, but like they spread it out so that it was like very inclusive to people who would be like, wow, that kind of represents me and how I feel kind of like Dr. Octopus, and that people are kind of poking fun at me, and now I'm, you know, now I have one trait that I really like about myself, which I'm very smart or whatever. I thought it was a very great series of books, and now the new Amazing Spider-Man continues that on. It's been really great, and not a lot of people have been like shouting about like the bad badly at it, but I guess it's because Spider-Man's bulletproof as far as that's concerned. You could literally have him do anything and nobody's gonna go boo Spider-Man, you know. But yeah, Superior Spider-Man was a great comic for diversity, I thought anyway.
Well, the new Ultimates looks pretty diverse. Well, I was trying to Miles Morales, Cloak and Dagger. I mean, over in the Ultimate Universe. Although they could be pulling that all up in the next couple of weeks. Who knows?
I'm really impressed that Marvel has continued to soldier on the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah,
I have to say.
Especially after what Jeff Loeb did to it.
But yeah, I'm surprised. I would have thought that experiment would have folded up by now.
Are you guys still enjoying it?
I have to say I have not been reading the Ultimate titles. I probably should give them a second chance, as it's been quite some time.
I stopped in for the big event where Galactus got lost over in the Ultimate Universe and wanted to eat the planet. And I mean, it was okay, but I just couldn't justify picking up more Ultimate books after the event finished. So,
yeah, that's pretty much been my reaction to the Ultimate titles in general.
At first I thought they were fun because they were a departure and kind of like a cinematic version of the Marvel Universe. But with Marvel now, it seems like the comics are moving towards reflecting the cinematic universe a little bit more. So there's really no need for that extra hyper gritty realistic version of the Marvel Universe. And so I'm wondering when they're going to finally file this redundancy and start either going, hey, why don't we go ahead and do another like purge of our books? Or maybe make it significantly different. Like, maybe make it more towards how Nova and Spider-Man are now, with that kind of youthful enthusiasm for the worlds that they have, rather than a movie realistic world. You know, maybe kind of trade off that old, you know, continuity kind of feel that the books had for a long time, and now they kind of don't. They kind of have a take it as read that these things happened. Here's a little paragraph explaining back issues. But now the Ultimates universe will have this continuity. You know, I don't know, but I think that it's either going to be, hooray, a great innovative like response, or we're not printing any more of these books.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, we're also going to find a lot more diversity in the new range of publishing options that there are for comics creators now.
Oh, yeah.
Both, you know, web comics. There's a great, a terrific web comic called The Young Protectors. That's this superhero soap opera about a teen hero who is in the closet and who basically gets exploited as a result of that and everything that happens because of it. There's, you know, a lot more options now with Comixology doing a lot more indie creator-owned books that are allowing creators to distribute their own comics, you know, just as easily as the big publishers do in terms of the electronic comics. So I think we're going to see a lot more. I think we're going to see a lot more of the those creators taking risks.
Oh, sure.
Than the big comic companies are going to be willing to.
Right. Well, like Jamal Igel's comic, Molly Danger. That's a, it's an amazingly fun comic,
mm-hmm.
and it stars a little girl. And I like it as much, or maybe a little bit better than I like Invincible. And I love Invincible. It does a very good job too of diversity. But man, Molly Danger is just so fun. Like it's. I haven't opened a comic. Well, I'll take that back. Amazing Spider-Man now is fun for me again. Like, I'm reading, I'm like, oh, man, I'm having so much fun with this comic. Like, I can't wait to get the next one because it's a lot of fun to read.
Yeah.
And Molly Danger is another one where I'm like, man, I just love how fun this is. And Invincible was fun at the beginning, but now it's kind of gotten into that whole, like, I'm going to – it's Dragon Ball Z now, kind
of. It's getting a little, like, dark.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. And it's not because Robert Kirkman's a bad writer or even runs out of ideas. It's just that sometimes his arcs have that dark turn and then the triumphant turn. But it's mm-hmm. like – but then there's the Astounding Man, Wolfman, and I'm like, that this one's incredible. It's fun. And then, like, there's not all this stuff happening that I go, what a bummer, man. You know? It's like, yeah. It's not like I'm reading Irredeemable every month anymore.
Well, I got into Invincible because you told me about it a few years back, Dan, and then last year or so I've been like, yeah, this is getting depressing.
Same here. I should have warned you. I backed away from the precipice myself, and I catch every now I go, okay, I'm going to grab three electronic issues and go, yep, okay, good. I made the right decision. And then I come back to you, I'm like, wow, okay, it's getting a little bit, uh-oh, watch out.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much you can do to make people's eyes bulge out of their head for a comic. And if it's not the OG whiz, this is fun, it's got to right. be, hey, they just right. smashed Invincible's head on the last page.
Yeah. Yeah, I have the exact same relationship with Earth 2. You know, it's I wish I could quit you, but,
yeah.
You know, every like, three or four months, I'm like, oh, I'll just buy the issues that have come out so far. And, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I wish
made the right decision. Yeah, I wish it would, you know.
I wish my will could change you, but it just won't happen.
It just can't, you know.
Oh, hey, G. Willow Wilson is writing Ms. Marvel.
Excellent. There we go.
And I'm surprised I haven't heard of her before. She's been doing comics since about 2007. She did a graphic novel called Cairo for Vertigo. I actually think I might have read that.
I have heard very good things about that one, too.
Yeah.
This is probably the most high-profile project.
Yeah, my sister's a huge Vertigo fan, and she was talking that one up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Vertigo is actually another, I mean, you know, especially of DC's line that has been, you know, very inclusive for a very long time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's like...
You know, well, way before its time in many regards.
And even before Vertigo, like when Alan Moore started Swamp Thing, you know, mm-hmm. If you just read Hellblazer off of Swamp Thing, when, who was writing that? It wasn't Milligan. Who was writing it at the beginning? I just started reading it again because the Constantine show is coming out, and I was like, oh, man, I want to revisit some of those old issues. I'm like, wow, John Constantine was a man of now living in the late 80s, early 90s. That's so weird to read somebody who was like, I can't imagine. People's heads must have been on fire when they were reading this book. Like, oh, my God. He went to a hippie commune and did what with all the guys? Yeah, he just did whatever. He did whatever he wanted. I was like, that's awesome. That's the greatest book ever. And still is. It actually is a very, very good read still. But yeah, Vertigo has had a pedigree of being inclusive, definitely.
Hey, so Young Avengers, what do you guys think about it?
I've been enjoying Young Avengers. I wish that they could manage a regular ongoing title. Young Avengers seems to be kind of in perpetual limited series.
Yeah.
So that, you know, every once in a while, a Young Avengers series ranging in length from one to you know, 13 issues will come along. It'll go for a while, and then it'll stop. And then apparently after a certain amount of time has passed, another one will happen. So I like Young Avengers when I get to read it. But, you know, I thought the last Young Avengers book was good. Its plot line was a little tedious at times.
That was the one with the I'm trying to remember the writer's name, the guy who did I'm blanking on it. The most recent run, Gillen and McElvey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, that had all of the interdimensional world hopping and, you know.
I thought the book was fun and stylish. The plot, I'll agree,
was
a little weak in places.
Yeah.
Maybe weak in several important places. But, you know, the book was fun, and you had fun. It makes up for a lot for me.
Yeah, the characters definitely. And the dialogue were pretty terrific. So
it's like I miss Excalibur as a book.
Yeah, I
miss it a lot.
Giant.
Yeah, when I was reading that, and you know what got me into Young Avengers was the Civil War. I was like, well, who's this Hulkling guy? And this is awesome. Wait, why am I not reading this book? And so I jumped off of the Civil War books and I started reading that. I'm like, wow, this is a great series. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really like that. And yeah, it has that problem where I'm like, well, I haven't seen a new one on any shelves, so I'm not going to grab it. I'll wait until they're finished doing their next one, and then I'll pick that up and read the whole thing. You know, and it's really hard nowadays for people who are in my, like, I will economically buy comics. So, kind of Ms. Marvel, I'm waiting for the first arc to come out in trades, and I'll be like, yay!
Yeah.
Well, I know one thing, they were talking about making it an ongoing, doing a second year of Young Avengers, and they said, you know, we kind of told the story we wanted to tell. You know, this is mm-hmm. how a superhero comic looks in 2013. This is the best way you can do it. And we could do another year, but why not go out on a high note? And
well, there's something to be said for that.
Yeah. You know, as opposed to, you know, dragging on and letting things kind of dilute. But
yeah.
Unless you're Dan Didio.
Oh, yeah.
That could be a retort for so many sentences, Chris.
Yeah. Well, I sort of picture him day after day. All right, I've got it. Before Sandman.
Oh. What the hell's going on with Sandman?
Neil has decided to come back and do another book for them. Apparently, DC realized that you can't pay him what you pay Scott Lobdell, to pick a name at random. So yeah, he's actually going to come back and work for them. Although my theory remains that Didio actually showed him a plan for Before Sandman, and he said with his evil grin, "And we've got JMS lined up to write it."
But now, the first two issues have come out for it, and that was like 6 months ago. Now there's been nothing.
Newest miniseries?
Yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
has to do with art, actually, from what I understand. Like, the art is finished, but being edited down to size because of the way that Neil writes words on a page. Like, the way he actually, yeah,
space.
The density of his narration and speech bubbles has kind of... not really befit the actual art that's finished. This is not the inside scoop, but kind of the scoop that I've heard is that the artwork is being adjusted to fit.
Hey, he was doing Sandman that's an ongoing monthly for what, 10 years?
Mm-hmm. Thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah, I can't believe this is going to be that much of an issue now. I mean, surely
it's because in a day and age where 99% of it's digital.
Yeah.
You can't really scan in a canvas, and this is all being done on canvas and paint.
Mm, okay.
So it's like, yeah, you can't just roll up a canvas, send it off to New York, and then they send it back going, hey, look, we need you to make some alterations because of
slight changes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And from what I understand, too, Neil wants to have it reflect the artist's vision as much as his vision for the words. So it's just a matter of making sure that it all fits and looks mm-hmm. good. And judging from the first two issues, they were amazing. Like
they looked
fantastic, and all of the story is good so far. But yeah, I'm kind of in the I want more, please.
It's a snow game, and I'm sure it'll be great when it comes out. Just I wish it would come out quicker. But what can you do? At least it's not George Martin. So, so hey, moving on. Steve, I understand there's a new edition of Icons.
There is indeed. There is indeed. The assembled edition of Icons is out in the wild in its electronic form, and the book just went off to the printer at the beginning of this week. Hooray. It's out there. It features tons of awesome new artwork from Dan.
Oh, thank you.
And the beautiful layout stylings of Daniel Solis.
Incredible.
So it is a good looking book, and all is said and done. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it actually in print.
Me too.
Yeah, I gotta say, both the Dans really brought their A game on this one.
Right? Yeah, without a doubt.
Well, thanks.
It is a fine looking book. Pretty much anything you know bad about the book can be attributed to me. So now that it's at print, it's really just a matter of finally moving ahead on some other projects.
Yes.
That have been waiting. But you know, the assembled edition makes a good foundation for Ad Infinitum Adventures to do more Icon stuff based off of that, because the print copies of the first print run of the original book were running out, and all the remaining stock that's left is on sale on the Green Ronin store. Mm-hmm. If anybody wants a copy, because they're it. Once they're gone, they're gone. And since there was a question of reprinting it anyway, it was a great opportunity to go back and revisit some things, fold in a bunch of new stuff that had been added on over the years, and just kind of polish it all up and have one combined, complete, rule set that'll be, really good to build off of going forward.
So you mentioned it's a good basis for Ad Infinitum Adventures to move on. Can I ask what your next plans are?
Well, the very next thing is finishing up Dan's Rise of the Phalanx adventure series.
Yep.
With the Metaskulk Invasion, which is the last adventure in the series.
No, it's the second to last. The last one is
second to last.
Yep, the last one is Reign of Chaos, which I have almost finished writing. The artwork is nearly finished for that one. I'm in a production of Little Shop of Horrors right now, so I have kind of slowed my artwork down for this last week of tech and then the shows. But after the 20th, you're going to start seeing previews of that artwork. I'll be showing it on Facebook and over at the Yahoo group and on RPGNet. I'll start giving sneak previews of some of the artwork. There's one piece out there of Red Cap, but...
When Dan says he's slowed down, he means to, like, the pace of a normal human being.
There's actually quite a lot of stuff that happens on the 20th. There's going to be an announcement for a Kickstarter for a new Sark City project.
Oh, okay. I was thinking that was going to happen.
I got a message from our videographer for the video. Mm-hmm. She needs a couple things from me and possibly you. I need to get with you on that. But, yeah, there's going to be an announcement on the 20th about that. It's going to be pretty sweet.
Awesome.
And then it's going to be all Icons all year long, basically. I also had a miniature board game that I designed that I might put together and put up on RPGNet. It's a print and play game, so if anyone's interested in that, I'll talk about that later on, maybe. I don't know. I'll show people that and see what they think. I've played it a few times. It was a lot of fun, but we'll see if people like it.
Cool. Artist, writer, miniature game designer, Dan Hauser,
Renaissance man.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
Hey, speaking of Renaissance man, Chris McLaughlin.
Yes, sir.
So tell us about the Freedom City comic book. I understand you have something to do with that.
Freedom City comic book?
Cosmic.
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 Oh.
It's Cosmic.
Yeah, Chris, you need more to do.
I have to say, I got to stop falling asleep during meetings.
I was sure I have seen a round table about that, and you'd have heard about it on Facebook the instant I read, there's a Freedom City comic book. Oh, my God, the Bowman's Adventures in real life. Yay!
Wouldn't that be great? Why don't you guys do that?
Please.
Well, please. No. Yeah.
I'm not saying anything. I'm abstaining from my fandom because I would scream and beg, but no.
We've talked about it, but it's the sad thing about it is that we would actually have to all find sufficient time to actually do it. And that's proven one of the hardest things of all. So
we just have a Kickstarter to clone you, and then
well, there you go. Now that's an option.
Look, I've seen a Kickstarter out there. A guy's making potato salad. He's making money hand over fist with Kickstarter.
There you go.
I don't know if he's sharing any of it. That's the weirdest thing. Like, I know that at the end, everyone just go, nah, not really. You're not really getting any of my money. But on the other hand, it's like, is he going to share the potato salad? Or is it just going to be a video of him enjoying potato salad?
It doesn't mail real well.
No. And you can't really potato salad on demand potato salad. I have friends who have done Kickstarter, and their Kickstarters, like, they either succeeded, just they made it past the line. And we've done Kickstarters, and I'm like, yeah, this is pretty funny, actually. The guy said what he was going to do, and he only asked for $10. It's not his fault people are giving him $30,000 to do this, or pretending to give him $30,000 to do this. It's not a failing of Kickstarter. It's exactly like, do you want to see this guy make potato salad? It's a free country. Go ahead. Give the guy money. Please just have an extra $5 when I put up my thing. That's all.
Give the people what they want.
Exactly. Oh, man. Saguaro-themed potato salad.
Although, speaking of Saguaro, Dan is doing some pretty fine icons-themed T-shirts.
Oh, yeah. I have a Zazzle store. I can give you the link, Mike, and put that up. It just has a couple different Icons T-shirts. I also have an Icons coffee mug, which uses the really fun Dan Solis laid out the GM screen, but it's got basically the art from the GM screen on a coffee mug.
I've got your old Saguaro coffee mug from the first edition of Icons. I drink my rum from that.
Nice.
There you go. See?
Nice.
Well, hey, I was wondering if we could talk about the Freedom City Cosmic book.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, am I still here?
Yeah. Sorry, Chris.
It's okay. I'm on summer break. I'm in no hurry. Well, yes, your Freedom City Cosmic book. Yes. Well, yes, I did work on that, and John has not wadded it up and thrown it at me, so I guess he liked it, or he may have forgotten. I completely forgotten I worked on it at this point. I don't know, but I'm trying to be optimistic these days. So, assuming that he didn't absolutely hate what I turned in, I got to do another history of comics sort of thing. So, I'm hoping that like the first time I did this, this will get somebody to call me a corporate tool in a public forum. That's kind of what I'm shooting for this time out.
Dream big. Because Green Ronin is a big monolithic corporation that's dominating the industry, or what?
Yeah,
because
we're the man. I mean, it's well known.
Yeah.
I've been to the Ennies. You guys don't have the Imperial March as your song, so you're really not the man yet.
Yeah, it's so funny working in this industry, because when you actually have to write something you think is going to touch a nerve and you hear nothing about it, but something that you consider to be just a clear statement of fact, somebody's willing to like break a playtester agreement to talk about how you're a corporate tool, and you know you're something akin to you know, like a Nazi in public forums, and you know, I guess I should be outraged, but really I'm scratching my head. You know, but I have another history of comics section that, you know, may lead to more insane criticism of me, but I'm pretty much used to it at this point.
So I'm guessing this is a history of cosmic themes in comic books?
Yes.
You corporate tool! Sorry. I'm sorry, I thought I should hold it in, but no, Chris, well, no. This will not stand.
At least wait until you read it.
Why? No one else, does.
That's against the spirit of the internet, and we both know that.
Exactly. Reading it first. That would slow down my response time.
Well, I really enjoyed your history of the Golden Age. I almost said the Green Roman Age.
Yes.
Golden Age. So definitely. When will we see the? I know I saw a cover online somewhere. When's that actually come out? When can I pre-order it?
That is an excellent question that I wish I had the answer to.
Same here.
But
and the cover you saw was on geeknative.com.
Yes.
Okay.
They had the preview art, and I love that cover.
Isn't that a nice kick-ass?
Oh, awesome, man, cover. Black Star. Oh, it's so good. It made me immediately go, I want that book.
Yeah, it's gonna be a really good book. I got to say, I'm very happy with how it all came together. So it's in addition to being a really good look at the, you know, sort of cosmic genre of comics, it's also some fun stuff for the Earth Prime setting and the sort of greater cosmos outside of Earth, you know, as far as that goes. So we get to play around some fun stuff there, and that all loops back into the new upcoming edition of Freedom City, which builds on the same themes and events. So it really ties in some fun stuff from all the way back to Emerald City Nights and the things that we sort of kicked off there.
Apparently there's some meta plot elements that were being expanded on in the Cosmic Book.
Yes, indeed. And we sort of look at the repercussions of things that happened or were kicked off in Emerald City Nights and how that has affected the sort of state of the cosmos.
So, Chris,
yes.
the history of the cosmic universe in comics. So, where do you approach it from? Like a reader or an author, or what's your approach to it?
Well, with me, I approach it as a smartass, of course.
smartass. Okay. Smartass Nazi. Don't forget Nazi.
Only occasionally. Only occasionally. I did get the hate note on Silver Age that my writing was too friendly, so I wanted to find the guy's email address and send him a 2-word email. Fuck you. And, thinking maybe, do you like the book better now?
I would draw you a picture of Alan Scott Green Lantern saying that to him. Or Barry Allen's Flash. Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Brennan.
Yeah. But yes. So yes. What was funny to me was when they first sent the outline for the project to me and they were talking about history of cosmic comics, first thing that popped into my head was like the Jack Kirby New God sort of stuff and the stuff that Jim Starlin was doing at Marvel in the 70s and I guess is still kind of repeating in the 21st century at Marvel. But, if you really look at the cosmic genre and its broadest implications, you can take it right back to Superman, and that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always it was fun to be able to talk about Superman and Captain Comet and DC's, DC had a series at one point in the 50s about an interplanetary insurance agency. I pull that out when people try to go, oh, have you read Space Cabbie? And I think, oh, Space Cabbie, you're just getting warmed up with DC in the 50s, my friend. If you haven't read the one about the Intergalactic Insurance Agency, you got some more reading to do.
Yeah.
So,
that's fun.
Oh yeah. I'm waiting for the gritty reboot of that.
Well, and the split we had to address in the cosmic book is even what you mean by cosmic in the comic book sense, because the source book has to deal with the fact that on the one hand cosmic tends to mean stuff that takes place out in outer space. Mm-hmm. And that involves aliens and is sort of science fiction-y. But on the other hand, cosmic is also used as a shorthand to mean just really, really hugely powerful and, on a tremendous scale.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's a lot of overlap. You get, characters like the Silver Surfer, who's, tremendously powerful and also, adventures out in space a lot.
Yeah. Like the Inhumans.
Right.
Or the High Evolutionary, who's kind of like,
who's back in the new Warriors book, if I can use that
phrase.
Oh,
really? That's pretty incredible.
From that I got to do a chapter about just breaking down some of the great genre tropes.
Yes.
About how you can reorder an entire alien society just by punching their leader in the nose. That Silver Age way of fixing things. And, if nothing else, if I didn't get anything else out of this book, I got one of the prouder lines that I've ever written is, there's a line in there where I wrote, any piece of technology that talks will invariably try to murder you. That's like the immutable rule of, the one ironclad law I could find. And there may be others, but that was my favorite.
Oh, man.
Damn,
you
I found differently right now.
And I know that Chris will have an answer. Did Herbie ever try to kill anyone in Fantastic Four?
Yes, in his first official appearance in the Marvel Universe.
Really?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Didn't even wait an entire issue.
Holy crap. Thank you for that answer. Now I have to find issue.
You're very welcome.
Because I don't hate Herbie. He kept me safe from lighting myself on fire when I was a kid.
This was a danger?
Well, according to everyone who ever saw Fantastic Four, thought that if you didn't release it with a robot instead of a kid who was on fire, kids won't set themselves on fire. And then Beavis and Butthead proved that to be true, so I dodged the bullet.
Supposedly, that story is apocryphal.
Yes. They just wanted something like R2-D2 in the show.
Well, that, and apparently there were actually, and you know, apparently nothing has changed at Marvel in this regard, there were licensing issues.
Oh, that too, yeah.
And the Human Torch had already been optioned for something else that never happened, and therefore couldn't be used in a Fantastic Four show.
Yeah, they let Stan go out to the West Coast, and he was, like, licensing out Marvel properties piecemeal. That's how you wound up with, like, the 70s live-action Spider-Man show.
Oh, man, that Doctor Strange-looking thing from before.
You know,
that was beautiful. I wish that could be a show again.
Well, you know, I do a bi-monthly film fest, and last time we did Bad Superheroes, we did a back-to-back shot of the Doctor Strange movie and the Captain America movie from the 70s.
The Captain America movie was good. I actually liked it because I thought it was goofy, but I was like, it didn't like harm my vision of Captain America. Like the same could be said for the Punisher, the first Punisher movie, where Dolph Lundgren doesn't use guns. Mm. And he's blonde, and he's not blonde. American. Yeah, and blonde for part of it, and you're like, what's up, Punisher?
Well, listen, I tell you, the great loss thing from this period in Stan's life, he licensed out Silver Surfer to a bunch of people that wanted to do it as a blaxploitation film.
What?
Yes.
That's
why wasn't it made?
The opening scene is the Silver Surfer coming to Earth, landing in Harlem, and having a pimp pull a gun on him and try to take his surfboard from him.
Oh,
and if I remember correctly, the character's name is like Sweet Daddy Wisdom or something like that.
Sure.
Okay.
It's like Brother from Another Planet featuring Norm Rad.
Yeah.
Oh man. Like, Roger Corman found 2 days to make Fantastic Four. These guys should have got off their asses and made this movie in a day. I would have watched it. I'd go looking for it. I may have also paid for a bootleg copy of the Fantastic Four movie at one point on VHS, which I did.
Yeah.
Because I wanted it.
Yeah, but I just, you know, the fact there was a time in American history where, you know, the Silver Surfer was going to clean up the ghetto.
Well, you know what, though? I laugh raucously at that, but wasn't that the whole point of the Brave and the Bold for a while? Like, like Green Arrow and Green Lantern were going to basically learn about culture.
Oh, you mean the hard-traveling heroes?
Yeah, yes. Hard-traveling heroes. That was the whole point, was like,
going to get,
yeah.
We're going to see real America.
Exactly. You care about purple people and yellow people. You sure don't care about black people. See, Kanye wasn't the first one to say that. It was some guy to Green Lantern. And Green Lantern's like, yeah, true, but, I mean, I cover a whole sector. Talk to Green Arrow.
Like, as I like to tell people that may not have actually read it, and this is coming from a guy, I actually have the My Ward is a Junkie issue signed by both writer and artist.
Oh, trust man.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you. Oh, it was great.
Neil Adams, right?
Or yes.
Neil Adams.
Yes, Neil Adams drew it, and Denny O'Neill wrote it. Yeah. And it was great. I brought it up to Denny O'Neill to sign it, and his wife was sitting there next to him. And his wife looked at it like literally like she'd never seen it before. Like, Denny, what are you doing with your free time? and he was just like, it was a long time ago. It's like, oh, God, I've accidentally gotten him in trouble with his wife. I feel horrible now.
Well played.
Thank you.
And like 20 years ago, he mentioned his wife always proofreads his stuff. But then he also said he had a big problem as a compulsive liar before, so maybe...
Yes.
Maybe it's before she started, you know?
Yeah, it could be. It was ways back. So.
I don't want to get him in further trouble with his wife at this point.
But in those days also, the cover almost had nothing to do with the inside of the book sometimes, so maybe she never saw the cover. The cover copy didn't go to her, just the story. Oh, this is a very heartwarming story. I mean, well, it's kind of messed up that Green Arrow beats up a kid. He doesn't even really, like, belong to him or anything. It's just a kid he knows. He probably would have, like, beat him to almost death, but he doesn't. He just smacks him once. But then he's not his kid. He's just a guy that he knows.
Mm.
In the 70s, you could do that. It was called parenting other people's children.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But anyway, getting back to Cosmic Book.
Yeah.
The last thing that's in there is I actually tried to grapple with the notion that since, you know, Cosmic is in the cosmic setting, you have like insanely powered characters showing up on a fairly regular basis. And I just started thinking, is there any way that you could sort of like differentiate levels between, you know, like, say, merely being like a Greek god as opposed to being the embodiment of universal hatred? Mm-hmm. You know, something like that. So I decided, you know, different ways of handling different levels of X levels. And I tried to stop before I got to the point of like, can I execute a trip attack against the embodiment of universal hatred? But, you know, at least give you some notions of how, you know, interacting on these type of characters on a regular basis might impact a campaign.
Well, back when Mighty Avengers was featuring Hank Pym, the embodiment of the cosmos showed up to slap him around a little bit and tell him to stop being a bitch. So
we've all had days like that.
Yeah, yeah. And he was like, you're your own worst enemy. Stop it. And then he punched him in the face.
And then the third and final, or fourth, I've lost count. It's summer. I don't have to count. The happiest thing for me one of the happiest things for me is we got to update the Freedom City 2525 material. So
yes,
sort of the first cosmic-y thing we ever done is now all set for third edition.
Correct.
Now, did I hear you correctly earlier, Steve? Did you say you're doing a third edition for Freedom City?
Yes, we are. As a matter of fact, Chris got to revisit one of my very favorite Freedom City theme villains and do a modern version of Doc Holliday for the new edition of Freedom City.
Thanks, sir.
So good.
That was fun to do.
So, yeah.
We were talking in the past tense, so the manuscript is done.
Largely done. There's still some work to be done on it, but it's a big chunk of it is finished.
Does this mean we might get a Time of Crisis 3rd edition upgrade, maybe?
Probably not, just because...
Kickstarter it! sorry, it is still my group's and I's one of our favorite ever series. Without a doubt, just, oh man, the last... I don't want to spoil anything, but the last part of that module is like... everything you want in a comic book setting, happening thing, which brings me to actually something that isn't really a spoiler because it's primarily about this character, but does Omega feature at all in the cosmic book? Like, do we get more on him?
He shows up much more in the Freedom City stuff.
Okay.
We're going to be talking a lot more. Cosmic book space was somewhat limited in terms of setting materials, so we made a decision to focus not on the other dimensions like the Terminus, but to focus on space within the Earth-Prime universe. So the Terminus gets a bigger treatment, and Omega and the Annihilists, his lieutenant lackeys, show up in that book.
Oh. So is that Omega on that cover of that gadget guide? The painted-looking cover?
No, that's a what we're referring to as a Terminus Probot.
Oh, man, that's cool. Now I got to pick that up, too. Damn!
Which he did a free set of stats for somewhere, I think, which should have been posted for download by this point. But yeah, we actually had we worked with the artist to design. The original concept was, you know, heroes fighting a robot, and of course by the time it was the cover concept was all done and we'd gone through all the sketches and concept work and we'd seen some of the final line work. John and I were like developing backstory for the robot and why the heroes were fighting it and, you know, all of that. So we ended up writing up a write up of the Probot and all of its stats.
Yeah, that's cool. And I love the picture of the flying, like, sky cycle army kind of swooping in. All that picture needs is a portal and some Kirby crackle.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it would be, it's already really good. But yeah, great. That was my question. Sorry.
So, Freedom City 3rd Edition 2015?
Yeah, most likely.
All right, cool. Cosmic Edition sometime soon. We don't know when.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, and I'm so behind on the schedule because it's all editorial production time for me. But I think Cosmic Handbook is towards the end of the year, if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay, cool. Sounds good. Interesting note on the Cosmic thing. I was reading an interview with Jim Shooter over on Comic Book Resources, and he mentioned Marvel was darn close to shuttering before they started publishing the Star Wars comic in the late 70s, and it actually saved the studio.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
And that was back in days when things were different in comics. Dazzler was selling 150,000 comics, and Superman was only selling like 60. So.
Yep. Well, Dazzler hooked into that disco / I don't know, blonde heroin thing.
Yeah. Well, there's also a copy, you know, floating around on the internet of Shooter's internal memo to Marvel about how they should buy out DC because, you know, DC was doing so poorly at the time and what Marvel should do with DC's catalog of characters once they owned them all.
Well, if I remember the story correctly, didn't, like, DC's corporate bosses come to Marvel and offer to sell?
That may be, actually.
Yeah. I also read a story just about why DC messes up so often, and it was like, they were talking about, I can't remember who was.
Is this the infamous DC has been trying to be Marvel for the last 50 years story?
No, where they're talking about how we do everything right, and Marvel does everything wrong. The readers don't know what they want. DC is correct in everything they do. And Marvel's just this upstart company. I'm like, yeah, well. And this was like in the 90s. And I'm like, well, you guys were messing up even then, man. Like, anybody read Zero Hour? It wasn't that great.
Well, okay. To be fair, putting bankruptcy era Marvel against DC after they recovered from Zero Hour.
Yeah.
You can have a little more of a conversation about that.
That's true. See, and that's the thing. Like, I didn't like Zero Hour, but I did like Armageddon 2000. Like, I liked the idea of a mystery villain, and then they ruined it in the last issue by uncovering the mystery and it being the dumbest thing in the universe.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, wow, I totally expected it to be the Riddler. It was like, oh, wow, it's really Woozy Winx is the bad guy? Huh?
Actually, that would have been better.
I know. holy crap, Clarion the Witch Boy, that's amazing. And then you're like, no, it's just Hawk from Hawk and Dove. Hawk who? Yeah, I know. Those minor characters from Dr. Fate who became way more interesting when they weren't in their own comic. Yeah, those guys.
Hey, the new Dr. Fate, he's Egyptian. Are you guys is that?
Yeah!
Yeah.
And there's going to be a new Clarion the Witch Boy comic, is what I heard, is the rumor.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That was on Bleeding Cool. They mentioned that.
So is this based off of the stuff that Morrison did for Seven Soldiers, or is that another interpretation entirely?
Well, and Nocenti is writing it, so Lord only knows.
Fair point.
I would bet they're going to change it, because other people don't tend to follow in Morrison's footsteps too well, but I'm just guessing.
Yeah, well, there's that. I mean, there's that and, you know, anybody trying to figure out exactly what happened in Seven Soldiers of Victory. So.
Man, I was so excited when it came out, and then I was like, I just looked like a dog staring at a fan. I was like, wait, what's going on here? Oh, I thought I was a smart guy, but now I'm just not sure, because... Yeah, that's
been reading comics over 40 years. It's the only time I've actually had to go to the Wikipedia page.
Well, I mean, you've got Clarion the Witch Boy coming back. Hopefully Stanley and this monster will come back. And then, you know, it'll just all reboot. It'll be great.
There you go.
I don't know. After what Kevin Smith did with Stanley and his monster, I don't really know if I want to let other people try that.
I applaud the try. I applaud anyone who wants to go and try the pole vault, even though they have no experience. They go, you know what? I watched Neil Gaiman do this kind of thing. I'm going to do And it's like, oh, well, it didn't quite work. But I really was like, oh, yeah, I forgot all about that comic. My dad had a couple of those. I remember that. But wasn't that really more of like a gritty version of Uncle Scrooge he just did? Why would you choose that comic? Does it have a monster in it? But I think it was more because he saw the kind of humorous Cain and Abel from House of Mystery and House of Secrets that he thought that would work. And it kind of did, and it kind of didn't. Like, the idea was, like, if this had been Clarion the Witch Boy instead of Stanley, I would have gone, yeah, that makes total sense. And it's a character that's really neat and, you know, has a point to be a jerk. But then that one's like, but that's kind of dumb. Anyway... I kind of hope they bring that comic back, is all I'm saying. I like fun comics.
Right?
I also like fun comics. I like things that are fun. I don't like things that are not fun.
Well, it's... Okay, I don't like a slog. I don't like things that make me go, okay, I'm reading this because I'm a fan of this character, but this seems like a job now. No, I'm not the proofreader or editor. I shouldn't have to be reading this and just shaking my head going, this shouldn't have been out here. Like, I'll give you a great example of the opposite of that. I got to actually talk to Mark Waid at C2E2 for a couple of minutes, and I just thanked him for making me like Daredevil again. Because oh my god! Like, I was like, you brought back Stiltman and made me actually think it was awesome again. I was like, yeah, I remember when Stiltman was actually kind of cool, and the reason why he does what he does. Because he's not supposed to fight guys above Spider-Man. Yeah, he is ridiculous for the Fantastic Four to even look at. But no, he's supposed to fight the Daredevil and Punisher. Power levels, thank you. And he was like, well, hey, thanks a lot, man. It was when we were all in the professional area, corralled in this one area. And these two people were like, why aren't we allowed in? I'm like, they're not letting Mark Wade in. They're certainly not going to let me in. And I'm sorry, ladies, but you're librarians. They're definitely not letting you in yet. When you see Mark move, then I'll might be able to get to move eventually. And then you'll be after me. Yeah. Because they were visiting. It was really funny.
Everyone I've ever talked to who's dealt with Mark Wade always had a positive story to tell.
The guy was talked with me about comics like we were talking on this podcast. It was truly one of the best parts of C2E2, and that was like in the first 10 minutes of the show.
Nice. Okay, well, hey, I have to get back to the manacles of my soulless corporate overlords. And I'm sure all you guys, Chris probably needs to get a bit to a drink and a poolside easy chair, I suspect.
Yeah, my 6-week paid vacation is calling.
Yes, you indeed. Lucky man, you.
Thank you.
Tweak the still in the back shed or something.
And again, Chris, our group thanks you and Steve for Freedom City's Time of Crisis and for the new Freedom City coming out. Definite must buy for my group, and I suggest everyone out there who's a fan of Freedom City also grab Emerald City. The hardcover is beautiful, the full cover, yeah. Color of it. It's just amazing. Like, I got the PDF first, I'm like, I really like this, but flipping through a book is so much better for me,
mm-hmm.
which is why I can't wait for the actual hardcover of Icons to come out, but, man, Emerald City, worth it.
Yeah, worth every penny. Thank you for the compliment, Dan, and I'll let you know that we do have a third time of on the drawing board, and hopefully they'll tell me to go write that soon. So.
Yes! Yep. Sweet.
Things are on the ups. And of course, cries out for the new icons because it's amazing. Yes, Dan, you were saying.
And just a brief thing, I will actually be at the Green Ronin booth at Gen Con this year. So if you're going and you want your copy of Icons signed, I will be there throughout the week at different times. And I'll definitely be running Icons in the Games on Demand room. So demos.
Yes.
Signing.
Come and make Dan run Icons for you.
Yes, do it. I'm happy to. You don't have to make me. I will do it. On demand.
Dan likes Funyuns.
Yes.
That's true.
Okay, anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
I think we're good.
All right, cool. Dan, Chris, Steve, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
As always.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, no worries. And to our listeners, thanks for joining, and we'll catch you next time on the Bath Podcast.